on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host here over this next hour, where we will dive into what is going on in the market, what is happening in the economy, bring some stories to you, and as always, answer your questions. Now, I can't believe it, but July is pretty much over at this point. We only have 2 trading days left in this month, and before you know it, it's going to be Christmas, and we're going to say it's 2026. And as time moves, it's easy to get lost. It's easy to not see what is going on around us, as we all have distractions in our lives. And I don't mean distractions in a negative sense. I mean things other than markets that we should be paying attention to. Our friends, our family, our loved ones. And because of that, we hope that you take this hour every day with Invest Talk to catch yourself up on the activity of the day and to educate yourself a little bit to make your journey to financial freedom a little bit easier. Now, in order to do that, in order to accomplish that mission, we will bring to you some stories, some educational items, some actionable material, but most importantly, we will be answering your finance and investment questions that you submitted via our Anytime Listener line over on our YouTube channel, or hopefully, if you want to talk to me live at any time during the rest of the show. Now, before we talk about market performance and run down those show topics that I have for you today, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, guys. Great show. I just wondered what you thought of the PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund as a dividend play. Okay, thank you.
The PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund, I think this is the third question or so in the past 6 weeks that at least I have answered. And the reason why we keep getting this question is because of the last 12-month distribution yield here, 15.64% on the PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund. Just as a refresher, the fund seeks current income as a primary objective and capital appreciation as a secondary objective. They look to do that by doing a dynamic asset allocation across fixed income and global credit sectors. It's a $6 billion fund. Its return has been pretty solid over the past a year or so, especially relative to its index, which is the Bank of America Global Fixed Income Markets Benchmark. But if you recall, this is a closed-end fund, not an open-end fund. An open-end fund is what you're used to with your SPYs, your typical ETA, your Qs. And essentially the way that works is when you want to buy or sell something, that share is either created or destroyed, and you're buying directly from the fund itself through authorized purchasers, but that's a little bit too complex. So just think about it, the share is being created for you and destroyed when you sell. Now, a closed-end fund is kind of like trading a company's stock. There is a certain amount, and you're buying it from somebody else, not directly from the fund, meaning that unlike open-end funds that typically trade at their net asset value, the value of everything that they hold, closed-end funds can trade at a premium or a discount. This fund trades at a pretty decent premium, usually between 7 and 12% is what I've seen over the past couple months. The reason why is because it is managed by PIMCO, because there is such high demand, because there's such high yield, again, and yield can change, you pay a premium to hold this fund. And so would I pay the premium just for the higher yield? Probably not. It's a pretty steep premium, meaning that if there's a lot of sell pressure, you could find yourself losing a lot without the net asset value of the fund itself even going down. So understand the dynamics of this fund. Understand what a closed-end fund is. Maybe it makes sense for you. For most people, probably not looking to pay the premium that exists right here for the PIMCO Dynamic Income Fund, ticker PDI. Alrighty, we got a lot to talk about today over the next 45 minutes or so. The first of which is our main focus point, which concerns this headline, 7 things you may not know about reinvesting dividends. It would be wise to take the time to learn about dividend reinvestment, including tax considerations, how the strategy fits various financial goals, and how it fits various market conditions. We'll also touch on a story that we briefly spoke about the other day, and Justin and I certainly mentioned yesterday, and that is the resurgence of the meme stocks. What does it say about the markets as a whole? What does it say about the idea of efficient pricing? And as crypto has started to become more prolific with the Genius Act, with stablecoin legislation, crypto lending is back. But is it as risky as it was 3 years ago? Spoiler alert, yes. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on how U.S. companies are using hot markets to roll over loans, getting lower interest rates, and slashing overall borrowing costs. On the question side, we also have some voice bank questions, including one on VTGN, which is the Vistagen Therapeutics, Inc., and another on compounding rates over time. We also have some questions that came into the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, which we will get to. And of course, I hope to hear from many of you live throughout the show. We're headed to a new break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. We'll get to all those show topics and answer more of your questions here on InvestTalk.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I want to watch you too.
888-99-CHART.
No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava Shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's Whole Body Meal Shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code INVEST for 15% off.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. Overall, reversing recent trends, finishing lower on the day, near worst levels. The Dow down 46 basis points, S&P 500 down 30 basis points, NASDAQ down 38, Russell 2000 down 61. Who were the worst performers of the day? Well, shipping and logistics names, rails, managed care, oil services, and pharma, some of the worst performers, big tech as well, moving lower with Tesla and Meta, the worst out of that group. Outperformers included food and beverage, biotech, HPCs, semis, and networking communications names. On the bond side, Treasury yields rallied a little bit, curve starting to flatten. You saw about 9 to 10 basis point retreat on the longer end. At the same time, the dollar index was up 30 basis points after rallying 1% on Monday, and gold finished up 40 basis points as well. What about oil? Oil looks like settled up 3.7%, reversing some recent trends in that commodity. But overall, market is in a wait and see mode. We have the FOMC meeting on Wednesday, but I would say more importantly, because we all know what the rate decision is likely to be, is earnings. I mentioned it last Friday. This week is a week where 40% of the S&P 500 is set to announce earnings. And the next wave includes some big Mag 7 names. Microsoft, Meta are on the 30th of July after the close, which is tomorrow. Apple and Amazon follow them the next day on the 31st after the close. And we've seen, despite some pretty high-profile earnings disappointments, fairly limited downside, particularly in the industrial and healthcare sector, where earnings have looked relatively poor. On the macro side, we did get a mix of economic data today, pretty solid consumer confidence number, lower job openings, and soft housing prices, all playing into that hopeful narrative that inflation is cooling. Diving a little bit deeper, July consumer confidence printed at 97.2, the consensus of which was 95.5, so a little bit of a beat there. June JOLTS job openings largely in line with consensus, though dropping from a downwardly revised number in May. And on the housing side, you had May FHFA and Case-Shiller home price indicators, both declining month over month. Moving over to trade, not much there, right? We talked a little bit about the trade deal, quote-unquote deal, with Europe yesterday. And today we got news that, well, an agreement has yet to be reached between the U.S. and China, though they are likely to extend talks once again. Looking ahead to next week, we have, or rather looking ahead to the rest of the week, we have ADP private payrolls, a first look at Q2 GDP and pending home sales, which will be out on Wednesday morning, along with the quarterly refunding announcement. Wednesday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon, we will see the July FOMC meeting. Again, the rates are likely to stay steady. So the market is really just looking to see what the what Jerome Powell has to say about the possibility for a September rate cut and what the how many dissents there will be. There's a couple of people jockeying for the next job when Jerome Powell's term is over. So what are Waller and Bowman going to say? June personal income, spending, and PCE inflation initial claims in Chicago PMI is set for Thursday. And July employment report, ISM manufacturing, construction spending, and University of Michigan sentiment will cap off the week on Friday. Looks like we got our first live call, Lucy from New York. How can we help you?
Hi, I just wanted to ask you about the stock ticker AMD. I've seen it go to about this price twice in the last 18 months, and both times it dipped down again afterwards. And I'm just wondering, do you think, is there something different that's happening right now? And what would be a good entry point to purchase this stock?
Sure. AMD is Advanced Micro Devices. They are a semiconductor company. They make GPUs, AI accelerators, DPUs, all sorts of products that have really fit in with the secular growth theme over the past 2.5 years. Now, over the past 52 weeks, they're up 26.97%. Over the past 3 months, they're up 84.72%. And sales have been growing pretty quickly, although leveling off after 2023, but still 30.8% annually over the past 5 years. Now, this stock can oscillate between pretty expensive and very expensive, right? Right now, it's sitting about 34.4 times forward-looking earnings. The high is 64.5 times forward-looking earnings. But I think what you're seeing with this price action right now is just some tailwinds from that secular growth theme and some pretty positive earnings out of other areas of the market. You saw AMKR and released earnings up 18% today. A lot of the semi space is still seeing record spending. And so that is in anticipation, therefore, of what hopefully investors would like to see out of earnings on August 5th here, right? There's not really much to the movement in price, 2.18% today, other than anticipation of elevated earnings. Now, this is a situation where these names are priced such that disappointment in earnings can be pretty catastrophic to pricing, right? You've seen historic levels of CapEx across the board, historic levels of spending that have really benefited these names. That's why you're seeing revenue climb like this. Now, this name doesn't really have the margins NVIDIA has, right? We're sitting at about 6.4% net margin, projected to be about 20% this year, but still nowhere close what the leader in the space has. I think for me, this name is a little bit too expensive with slowing growth relative to what you're seeing across the industry. And that's probably because it has had such a ridiculous run-up over the past 3 months and put itself in a position that any meeting of expectations or miss on expectations, again, leaves a lot of downward pressure here. So I would say for this particular name, not the space in general, but for this particular name, a lot of risk to the downside heading into next week where we will be seeing earnings on August 5th. Certainly, if I were looking to open a position, I would not do it before then. That's not to say that the stock price might not climb if they do beat, but this is a risk reward situation here. And for me, with this type of valuation, this close to earnings, the risk of getting in now a little bit too high. Thanks for the call. Alrighty, we already got one live call from our friend Lucy in New York. Hoping to get more live calls from all of you anytime over the next 40 minutes or so. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART is the number if you want to get through live over the next 30 minutes or so. But until we get our next caller, let's dive right into my main focus point today. And it's an important one because oftentimes investors focus on dividends. So let's talk about the three things you may not know about reinvesting those dividends. Now, first and foremost, you may not know how dividend reinvestment works with wash sales. Reinvesting creates new share purchases. Wash sale rules disallow tax loss harvesting if like shares are bought 30 days before or after a sale. And so timing dividend reinvestment around tax moves can be a little tricky. Now, a lot of these are going to focus on taxation because it is an important part, but usually a secondary part about what people think about. Now, another thing you might not understand is, well, oftentimes, numbers don't perfectly round to whole numbers when we're talking about dividends. So will I get fractional shares? The answer is you could. You certainly could get fractional shares. Sometimes companies, when they do dividend reinvestment, will just do a whole number and then give you the difference in cash. But rest assured that if you do get fractional shares, there's nothing to worry about. Most brokers will let you sell them, usually via market orders. But keep in mind, settlement may take longer, not necessarily, but it might take longer than selling a whole number of shares might. Another one is associated with dividend taxation. Now, at my last job, I spent a lot of time working on our ETFs, non-qualified versus qualified dividend distribution. And the reason why is because investors who are invested in ETFs, and really investors in general, should care about the tax treatment of the income that they are seeing. And so U.S. companies that trade in the United States, with the exception of real estate investment trusts or passive foreign investment companies or a whole other host of exceptions, generally give you qualified dividend income, which gives you the lower rate of long-term capital gains. What you want to be careful of is that non-qualified dividend and bond income, which is taxed as ordinary income. meaning that the tax liability you have for it will be whatever your personal income tax level is. If you exist in the highest tax bracket and you really want to be conscious of your tax hits, well, then maybe treasuries and municipal bonds are right for you because they can be tax exempt at certain levels. Now, when you do reinvest these dividends, right, you're not actually seeing the cash that is coming to you. So the question is, do you have to pay taxes on that, right? You're getting this cash, but it's immediately reinvested. Well, if it's in a taxable account, yes, you will be liable for those taxes at the time that the dividend reinvestment happens. You must track them as part of your cost basis, creating multiple tax slots. Again, this is essentially a share purchase. And this can make future sales and tax reporting complex, but luckily most brokers make it a little bit easier for you. Another one is, okay, Luke, well, this company pays a dividend. And if a company pays a dividend, that means it certainly must have some sort of profits that it has to pass on to me. Does that mean that it's a better company? Well, academically speaking, empirically speaking, not necessarily, right? Dividends don't increase company value. There's a model called the Modigliani-Miller model, and it essentially shows that. And that's something that anybody who studied economics and finance has looked at. But the key here is when a dividend is paid out, right? Understanding that a company is worth the present value of its future cash flows and its assets and all of these things. Well, if a company is paying out a dividend, how do they pay it out? They either pay it out with cash or they pay it out with shares. If they're paying it out with cash, cash is leaving their balance sheet, meaning there are less assets of the company. And therefore, hypothetically speaking, right, in a frictionless environment, you should see the stock price of a company fall by the value of the dividend. Now, in practice, it doesn't fall by the exact amount, but the key here is that nothing is being created here. Now, for some investors, they do prefer dividends for the perceived stability and predictability. But we talk about all the time on this show, dividends are not set in stone. Just because they are stable now does not mean they will be stable into the future. Another question, given, you know, we have a little bit of a deteriorating economic condition relative to last year, is how do they perform in a recession? Well, dividend stocks often hold up better in downturns. Not because they're paying a dividend per se, but because dividend stocks tend to be companies that are more mature. They aren't in the crazy growth phase in the life cycle of their business. They are value-oriented securities. Now, that doesn't mean the highest dividends are going to do the best, right? Getting high-yield funds without quality screens can lead to poor outcomes for investors, and sector exposure matters as well. It doesn't matter if it's an established dividend-paying company. If it is a cyclical name, then in a recession, it might not do well. And I think the last thing people are really concerned about, because dividends are for income, is can I live off of dividends in retirement? Income-only strategies certainly appeal to those who are trying to avoid that principal drawdown, but it tends to be hard to generate enough yield on a sustainable basis. You can see names that are 5, 6, 7% yields, but we know that those can be value traps. So understanding the size you might have in order for these dividend portfolios to pay all of your needs can be unrealistic. The benefit is being able to draw down from your assets, not just supporting those dividends, means that you can decide the timing of the cash flows. Nobody else has to. Alrighty, we're moving into our next break. Our InvestTalk phone lines never close. You know the number, 888-99-CHART. You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
Longer days, warmer nights, and you deserve a mattress that keeps up. Avocado Green Mattress uses organic materials that naturally help you sleep cooler, so you can wake up refreshed. It's true. All Avocado mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable materials that are free from harmful chemicals and allow you to sleep cooler. Avocado mattresses are designed to provide exceptional comfort and support, with options ranging from gentle firm to plush, meeting diverse sleep needs and preferences. You can even try before you buy. Visit one of their retail stores or premier retail partners to experience the Avocado Green Mattress comfort in person. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. So, for better sleep, through breathable, naturally temperature-regulating materials, which can improve overall well-being, head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado, dream of better.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. Luke Guerrero is here now, taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm looking for advice on Vistagen Therapeutics as a speculative play, ticker symbol VTGN. The company specializes in intranasal products for psychiatric and neurological disorders. It has 5 drugs in the pipeline, 1 in phase 3 with positive data, and the remainder in phase 2. It seems promising as a newer concept, of course, if it works, and insiders have been purchasing more shares recently. I acknowledge it's like buying a lottery ticket, basically, but just looking for your thoughts on the current state of the company and anything else you can add. Thanks for all you do. Have a good day.
Vistagen Therapeutics is a late stage biotech company in that they have 1 drug in phase 3 and a couple drugs in phase 2, focusing on CNS disorders, social anxiety disorders, depression, menopausal symptoms, and cognition. And their lead drug candidate, fasedienol, is in phase 3 trials with results expected in Q4 of this year. Now, they have had some positive data come through about this drug. That's why it's up 33.62% over the past 3 months. There's some optimism around clinical trials, which has really led to this insider purchasing. And you see some pretty strong momentum, right? You see some strong momentum in this name over the past 3 months. But at the same time, it is still a pre-profit company. Right, so revenue is very low. Net margins are in the negative 7,000 range where it's projected to be this year. And so it is exactly what you said it was when you called in. It is a lottery ticket. Now, I don't know if this drug is going to be successful. There are plenty of drugs that get through phase 2, get to phase 3, don't do well, and then we move on. And so if you wanted to put a little bit in here as a lottery ticket, I wouldn't call it investing, I would call it gambling. And we as an investing show don't usually recommend throwing money into these pie-in-the-sky biotech names. One of them will hit, but it doesn't necessarily mean this one will be the one. That is Vistagen Therapeutics, ticker VTGN. Every day now, we receive questions from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel for our growing audience of viewers. And when you leave one, we like to get to those as quickly as we can. This question is from our friend Peter in New York. It says, longtime listener and truly value your opinions and philosophy on investing. I would like to invest in the nuclear market, but trying to pick one potential winner seems so risky. I looked at the ETF NLR, which has holdings all across the nuclear power chain, including miners to utilities, operating power plants. What are your opinions on some of the core holdings in this ETF? Thank you for your insight. Well, NLR is the VanEck Uranium and Nuclear ETF. It holds a pretty narrow portfolio of companies involved in the nuclear energy industry, ranging from big industrial conglomerates to uranium miners. Eligible firms have to have at least 50% of their revenue from the uranium and nuclear segment. It heavily overweights utilities and carries a little bit of weight in energy, giving it a large cap tilt. It's about $2 billion with a 56 basis point expense ratio. Year to date, it's done pretty well, up 45.68%. relative to a benchmark about 44.92. The reason why uranium and nuclear have done so well is because the anticipated high energy demand going forward and the necessity to diversify our grid, and not just in the United States, but globally as well. Now, as it mentioned, there's a little bit of large cap bias here, about 42.56% in large caps, about 29% in mid caps, about 26% in small caps. And as promised, a lot of energy and industrial weight, utility and industrial weight in this fund. Now, the big names are exactly the ones you would expect: Constellation Energy, Cameco, which we hold for our clients, Uranium Energy. It's pretty broadly diversified across these. Interestingly enough, right, I'm looking at about the top 10 makes about 55.1% of the benchmark, which leads me to believe that there's got to be some sort of capping in here, because I'd imagine that Constellation Energy and Cameco would be a higher weight here if it was uncapped. Let's take a look. Index selects and weights holdings by market cap, with individual weights capped at 8%. There it is. So there's a market cap weighted fund capped at 8%, meaning you're going to get more small cap exposure. So this is essentially a nuclear uranium ETF that is tilting towards those smaller names because of the effective cap here. I think this is a pretty solid way to approach the sector. It gives you broad diversity, focusing not just on utilities, but also on energy, also industrials. Again, broad way to go with the theme here. And I think generally speaking, the broader you can get on these themes, the more net you can catch here, the more beneficial it can be for you as an investor. So 56 basis points actually sounds pretty reasonable to me here, because they're not really just doing a set it and forget it easy methodology. There's a little bit of active management here, even though I imagine they only rebalance periodically. So if you're looking to get some broad exposure to uranium and nuclear, I don't see any problems with the VanEck Uranium and Nuclear ETF. All right, looks like we got another live call from Rob, who's listening on AM 1220 and has a question on LNW. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
I do not own it, but I am interested in it. I'd like to know what your thoughts are, Luke.
Well, what interests you in the name?
Well, I know they're big into the whole gaming thing, which I know absolutely nothing about, but I know that it's certainly a huge market, and they seem to be capturing some of that market. And looking at a three-year chart, stock has done pretty well.
Yeah, so let's dive into it then. It's pretty good bullet points there for me. Light and Wonder, formerly known as Scientific Games, they design content and hardware for land-based casinos, online gaming, and social casino games, using their SciPlay and iGaming segments. Now, over the past 3 months, it's up about 15.03%, outperforming its industry each of the past 6 years, which is actually pretty impressive here. Revenue growth, though, has fallen from 2019. It did really struggle during the pandemic. Revenue fell to $2.1 billion, and it's since climbed its way out there, almost back to that pre-pandemic high of $3.4 billion, projected to be $3.4 billion this year. At the same time, right, it lost money pre-pandemic, just positive in 2021, but margins started to expand in 2023, and they keep expanding. Net margin projected to be 13.9% this year. Now, over the past 3 months, it's really been driven by the announcement and implementation of this multi-year cross-platform revenue plan, something that has actually shown itself, it looks like, in recent quarterly earnings. Q1 earnings did beat on revenue and earnings per share, and we're approaching Q2 earnings now on August 6th. And so, keeping that in mind, right, it's trading at a relative valuation that seems pretty reasonable, 15.7 times forward-looking earnings, only about 2.7 times sales at about its averages. From a technical perspective, seems pretty okay. I wouldn't say it's in a general uptrend or a downtrend. It's kind of been ranging for about a month on the back of some, again, good earnings earlier this year. I would give the advice that that in general, which is as we approach earnings for companies, it's best to stay out because empirically speaking, the historical returns of buying before earnings is negative. Now, that doesn't mean that every company's return is going to be negative after earnings. It just means that you're kind of throwing yourself in a pot at a time when people are trying to assess the fundamental value of a company with new information out there. Now, I do like the turnaround program from this name. I do like its emphasis on this cross-platform content. And I do like that its margins and its cash flow have been consistently expanding for a couple years as they've been buying back shares. So overall, I do like this name. It's at a relative valuation that seems reasonable, but I would still wait to see how earnings shake out in the next week or so, just so you're not just in there with a bunch of people betting on the direction of earnings. That is Light and Wonder, ticker LNW. Thanks for the call, Robert. Now, Justin and I briefly mentioned it yesterday, and I talked a little bit about it last week, but I think it's important to put it in the context overall of what is happening in the market. Now, if you were listening to Friday's show, you would recall the acronym that is now being used to describe the new meme stocks, which are Krispy Kreme, Open Door, Rocket, and Kohl's. And due to their tickers being Donut, Open, Rocket, and KSS, Dork, the new meme stock group driven by retail investors, because they're being targeted by short sellers. You saw massive price movements. You saw Open Door surging 500% in July before falling back, right? Showing the speculative nature of that trade. And it really is, once again, what we saw during the GameStop era of retail investors organized in some fashion on social media sites like Reddit, attacking their hated institutions, hedge funds, because of the amount of shorts they have in these names. But this isn't the only thing I want to highlight about the speculative nature of today's markets. It's not just meme stocks. Goldman Sachs has noted speculative activity is approaching the dot-com era levels and the stimulus levels of 2021. Zero-day options are surging, meaning people are purchasing options that are expiring the same day. They hit a record volume of 2.1 million trades in Q2 of 2025, with retail making up half of those trades. And it's not because of stimulus checks this time. Unlike in 2021, when stimulus checks are gone and Fed policy is tight, or at least tighter than it has been for the last decade, yet retail speculation is still on the rise. Retail makes up about 20 to 25% of all trades right now. That is down from the 2021 number, but still well above the pre-pandemic norm, which ranged between about 10 to 16% of overall trades. So why is this happening? Why is this speculation happening? If it's not that we're just getting free money thrown at us, if it's not because Fed policy is very loose and the money supply is fluid, a lot of it has to do with tech-driven access. App-based brokerages like Robinhood, which is up over, 150% year-to-date. What's Robinhood up? It's up 177% year-to-date. They've democratized leverage and micro-investing for the masses. You have everything accessible in your phone anytime you want to make a trade. Now, in some ways, even after normal trading hours. JP Morgan is seeing a shift. Even low-income households are now investing more, with participation quadrupling since 2015. But the problem isn't that more people are investing. The problem is that more people are speculating. More people are gambling. Investing is not buying Krispy Kreme and Kohl's. Investing is not trying to take advantage of open interest, hoping that there's going to be a short squeeze and you are the beneficiary of that. Because the reality is most retail investors, ask those who invested in GameStop, are still left holding the bag. It makes the market structure all the more fragile. Cliff Asness from AQR warned that retail speculation is damaging market efficiency, and we haven't really even seen yet how it operates in a true downturn. Certainly, the risks out there are greater when more money is flowing to things that don't have as much fundamental value. Just because you can trade from your pocket doesn't mean that you should. All right, let's keep things moving and try and tackle this caller question before the break.
Hey, Luke and Justin, this is Lewis calling from Peru. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanks for all you do to help us with our investing questions. I went online and just looked up a compound interest machine, I guess you would say. And if you put $50,000 in today and it averages 8% a year and it's compounded monthly, you'd be looking at like $367,000 in 25 years. And the payout that year would be $29,000. So is that type of analysis fair or am I missing something? Thanks so much for your time, and I'll be listening on the podcast. Have a great day.
So I think what you're looking at is the power of compounded interest, meaning if you're getting a return, in this case, you're doing it monthly, and it's compounding, meaning that you get returns on your returns, how is your money going to grow over time using 8%, which is a reasonable long-term return based on the historical returns of the S&P 500 over longer periods of time? And so it is fair to say that based on that 8%, you start with money here, you end up with all this money down the road. But that's not necessarily going to bear itself out in reality. You could have invested that money for a long period of time, and the end of the road was in January of 2009. And what happens then? Well, you compounded, but the timing is such that the market crashed and you don't end up with that pile of money. And so over longer periods of time, yes, you can try and make these assumptions that help to understand the power of investing. But so much of investing is something we can't control, which is market timing. Don't think your money will compound at 8% over time and that what you save today will exactly be what you expect it to be in the future. Alrighty, we have one more break, which gives you one more opportunity to call in and ask your question. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
No two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Luke or Justin. I'd like to hear your opinions on the high-quality business of Adobe. It seems like the sentiment for the business is going in opposite direction of the financials, and there's growth in the business, there's value, and I feel like at the current price, there's far more reward than there is risk, unless there's something that some new risks that I'm not seeing. Please share with us if you feel like today would be a good day to buy it, because I'm really getting close to it, and I think that there's a significant misprice in the market today. Thank you.
Adobe Inc. is a software company, global technology company, mainly for digital marketing and media solutions. Now, year to date, it's down 16.64%, down 30.92% over the past 52 weeks. And in the wake of its earnings 3 months ago, it is flat. It's underperforming the industry by 35.5% this year, underperforming the S&P 500 by 25%. It's had a rough couple years. And the reason why is because it hasn't really done a good job integrating AI into its platforms, number one, and because of competition. And that's always been my issue with Adobe over the past couple of years, is that it seems to be the easiest business to enter given the advancements in large language models. Now, you do have IPOs in the near future, Figma being one of them, that should maybe buoy the valuation of companies like Adobe if the market is willing to price new entrants at a higher level, but it could also work in the opposite direction as well. I think, yes, they have had positive earnings, but just barely beating consensus, not enough to offset some of those broader structural concerns within the industry itself. And so I think that right now where it's trading, which is about 16.6 times forward-looking earnings, although it's at a low, really is just incorporating the risks and the threats of new entrants to Adobe's business. That is ADBE Adobe. So a lot of talk about crypto recently, and anytime there is talk about crypto, well, the risks start to rise as well. And in this case, it is in the form of lending. Crypto lending is back in spite of the uncollateralized loan crash that collapsed the crypto market in 2022. This company, Divine, has issued 30,000 uncollateralized loans since December, mostly under $1,000 in USDC stablecoins. Borrowers are everyday people. They're targeting low-income, underserved populations, people that may not have access to financing. And so it's essentially what they have dubbed microfinancing on steroids. But subprime lending, if you will, comes at a cost. Divine's charging 20 to 30% in fixed rates. 3Jane, another company, offers unsecured lines on Ethereum. They're backed by the same VC firm that also funded FTX. I think one of the big issues here is, yes, there is investor demand for this. Yes, there is borrower demand for this. Startups are funding these loans, right? More companies are appearing every day to fill this investor demand and this consumer demand. But there's some enforcement risk. There's some regulatory risk. There's some real risks here to the financial system broadly. We saw in 2008 what happened when under-collateralized debt became toxic and proliferated the financial system. But even back then, there's a lot of hoops to jump through in order to get a mortgage that you should not have had in the first place. Albeit there weren't enough, there was not enough checking of credit quality. But the big problems in financial markets and in economies happen when debt becomes toxic and proliferates. And so I'm watching this cautiously. Wall Street is watching this cautiously, albeit JP Morgan and Cantor Fitzgerald trying to enter this space. But the risk-hungry VCs are surging ahead. And so understanding the risks that are out there can help you position your portfolio to better make it through unfortunate downturns. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, if you think you might be exposed to more risk than you otherwise should be, if you've been thinking about your taxes, if you've been thinking about estate planning, at KPP Financial, we can help you with a no-cost portfolio review. It all starts at investtalk.com. Just click the portfolio review button. And while you're at it, if you want to tell one friend, just one friend or family member about InvestTalk and have them join the family, we really would appreciate that as well. Get your downloads at Google Play, Spotify, and iTunes. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.